Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. We're here. December 2021, the Year in Review series has finally arrived. And yeah, it's here. 12 episodes done, 4 episodes of the MMA Year in Review done, 16 episodes, like probably almost 20 hours worth of stuff. It's been a wild ride to the end, but we're finally here. And helping me join Review this month is I actually decided to not do it myself and call in an old friend that had been on the show or the series before, Jesse Collings, who's a columnist for Wrestling Inc. He also does some work for Voices of Wrestling as well as the podcast, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast as well. And he joined us, I believe it was in May. And yeah, we talked all about December, went for about 90 minutes. I didn't know if it was going to go that long. We're just kind of just shooting the shit talking. And even though things just happened in December, you know, a lot of these things were newsworthy. We had some additional big names released from WWE under varying circumstances. We had a big name re-sign with WWE. AEW had the 60-minute draw with Danielson versus Page. We talked about that a little bit. The end-of-the-month issues with Tony Khan and Big Swole. And again, this is why I wait till first part of January to do these, because even on December 31st, shit happens in the world of pro wrestling. We also had Ring of Honor Final Battle, all types of GCW news, and all that as well. So let's get right to it. The finale of the Pro Wrestling Year in Review series has arrived. Josh Nason, Jesse Collings, talking about December 2021. Enjoy. Well, I feel like the marathoner that's finally at the end, ready to hit the finish line, but I still got a couple miles to go, before I sleep. And we're here. The year in review for pro wrestling is complete with this episode. This is December 2021. And rejoining me, a duplicate guest, but someone I'm glad to have back on. He was a lot of fun the first time and wanted to have him back on once again. His name is Jesse Collings. He is back for, let me tell you who he is. If you do not remember, he's a column writer for both Wrestling Inc. and Voices of Wrestling. He's also the co-host of the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, which you can find on the YouTube and everywhere else. I'm sure you can get your podcast. Jesse Collings, welcome back. Duplicate guest. How about that?
Thanks, Josh. I'm happy for you to have finally completed. I know this was a really ambitious project you attempted this year, doing 12 episodes of pro wrestling in addition to the 4 episodes you do of MMA. And for the people who have stuck with you this entire time and listened to every single one of these, I hope we can finish on a strong note here, wrapping up the month of December.
I'm positive that we can. Your appearance before was great. And if you care, I am completely blanking. What month did you and I do originally? Was it like April or no, it was May? Or now I'm completely blanking. Or maybe it was in March.
We did May.
May. Okay, got it. It seems so long. It seems so long ago.
I know. It seems so long ago too. I'm a little bit more, we were talking about this before, but just going over all of the stuff that happened in December, you sent me like a lot of the notes about all these things that happened, and I forgot about a lot of them, and they only happened a few weeks ago.
I know.
So I don't know if that has my short-term memory being bad or just so much happening, especially on top of how busy of a time this is, you know, of year for everyone in their personal lives generally. It really is incredible how much stuff happens each week that you forget about at the end of the year.
Certainly. Yeah, and there are things that you know, like I said at the beginning of the series, there are things in this list that or not on this list that, you know, weren't really major events, but all of a sudden, you know, 3-4 months from now, I could look back and some big, oh, you know, that led to this, which led to this, you know. And that's the thing with this business, is there's no slowdown and everything seems to be news. And yeah, you never know which kind of like, I think it was like a giant Plinko board, familiar with like Price is Right parlance and those games. It just kind of, you know, the Plinko chip just goes from here to here to here to here to here, and it could just go all the way over to the right, and you're like, wait a minute, I thought it was going left, and then it just shifts, and yeah, this is, wrestling is a giant Plinko board is kind of what I'm trying to say. And WB trying to avoid being the, what is it, the yodeler, the guy that goes goes up and over, the Matterhorn that goes up and over and tries not to fall off, I think, in a lot of ways.
Yeah, you have to stop the guy before his price gets too high and he goes over the limit.
That's right.
Well, and to what you said, like a lot of this stuff, it's almost hard to put into, we don't have the perspective yet as we would like when we did May. We can go back and say like, oh, this was the start of, X, Y, and Z. Here we're doing a little bit more prognosticating by picking out some of the stuff that looks like a big deal right now, but for in a few months from now, it could be a nothing burger. It could be something that secretly changed the industry, but we haven't realized it at that point. It's a totally different perspective on and we're almost prognosticating what we think is going to be really important in 2023 that happened at the end of 2022.
Well
No,
put.
I'm 2021 and the end of 2021 and
Right.
start
Right.
of 2022.
All the years and dates are blending together at this
Yeah.
point. So let's start with WWE, as we have done quite often in this series. And really, a lot of the news we've let out through this whole series was releases and surprise cuts and additions and so on. But really, with WWE, a lot of cuts. And this month saw, for different reasons, we had Jeff Hardy, who was cut, released rather. Toni Storm was released. And Jeff Hardy, I guess we'll talk about kind of what he did after that. And then Kairi Sane also becoming a free agent. These are three different people played three, different roles in WWE over the past couple of years, so to speak, within the system and also on the main roster. I mean, Jeff Hardy going back, I don't know how many years at this point. I believe his third WWE run, all told. And, just we kind of the same package in a lot of ways, but just not treated the same. And even though the fans take to him, they kind of just rev him up, then they slow him down, rev him up, and then all of a sudden he's on main event for, a couple months or disappear or something like that. Cut due to this bizarre house show incident that happened, I believe, it was Corpus Christi, Texas, earlier in the month. And then all of a sudden, a few days later, he was released. And then Toni Storm, over the holiday break, everything, was supposed to be quiet during the holidays. And all of a sudden, we get news that Toni Storm was no longer with WWE. We didn't know if she was cut due to budget reasons or something else. We soon learned it was due to her own request. And then Kairi Sane, who has been over in Japan and didn't really know when her contract was going to be up, she requested to work a Stardom match. I believe it was last year, or 2020 rather, may have been. Actually, no, sorry, 2021. And was denied that request and was just kind of just there with her husband, wanted to be there, obviously, during the pandemic, went over in 2020. And she became a free agent as well. So three different talents that were released or no longer with WWE and have contributed a lot of different things to the brand. And now we're all on the market again. Kind of a weird situation with all three, or actually with two of the three, rather.
Well, they're really different than most of the releases that we saw in 2021, where you would have like these mass lists, like there would just be one afternoon and all of a sudden 10 guys would be released. Kairi Sane, I think most WWE fans had kind of mentally moved on from her being in the company because she wasn't working for WWE in like an on-screen capacity. I don't even know really what she was doing. I guess she was like an ambassador for WWE in Japan, but obviously, I think she wants to probably move her career forward outside of WWE, which would seem like it would probably be working for a Joshi promotion or maybe a couple different Joshi promotions. And perhaps she does find her way back to the United States. I'm sure if she really wanted to, she could go hit do an indie tour of the United States and get a lot of bookings. I'm sure she could probably end up work for AEW. I'm sure they would be interested in her. Jeff Hardy, it's hard to say what's going to happen for him in the future. And like you said with Jeff, like always popular with the fans, wasn't really pushed seriously. Kind of similar to Rey Mysterio in the sense that they have a certain credibility with the fan base because they were legends during, and they were big stars when a lot of the fans were younger, whether if they were children or teenagers or young adults, in the early 2000s or the late 90s. But never pushed really seriously, not the kind of person that Vince McMahon would want to push into a main event picture. And really just kind of would be around and would get big pops when he'd be on or he'd have a match and people would cheer for him, but never really taken seriously. And I do look at SmackDown right now. I don't know if Roman Reigns is going to be on the show on this upcoming Friday after testing positive for COVID and missing the day one show, but no Roman Reigns. Drew McIntyre's health in the short term due to his neck injury is up in the air. You look at that SmackDown side, and if Brock Lesnar is on Raw now, you look at that SmackDown side, and you're like, man, where is the star power on this show? And you really think they could use a guy like Jeff Hardy on SmackDown at the moment. But for, again, we still don't really know why he was terminated. We don't know if he needs, he says he doesn't need to go back to rehab. I don't know. I don't even want to say really anything about that, but it's really strange how his kind of career ended in WWE and how they could really use him right now, immediately.
Mm-hmm. And what about Tony Storm?
Tony, I don't see the other thing with Tony is that, like, I'm a big Tony Storm fan in that I think that she has really good potential and would be someone that's who has a personality and character that's really easy to book as a babyface. And I'm, even though it's WWE and I kind of don't have super high expectations for them creatively, I was surprised that they did such a bad job with her. And obviously she seems like somebody that was frustrated with her, what she was doing, and she wants to do something else. And so I would assume that she would be headed towards perhaps AEW or perhaps back to Japan. But, and again, her release was really strange too, where she was basically didn't do anything in WWE for a few years. I know she was NXT. I know she was in the Mae Young Classic. I knew she, feuded, for the title at NXT for a short period of time, but really didn't do anything of note in WWE. Finally gets on SmackDown, finally gets like at least what we could be considered a push on SmackDown, is in a world title program. And then just gone in the wind.
Yeah.
Like, just like she one day, she just had a match. She said, I want my release. And they said, okay, here's your release, which they haven't always done. And she's gone. And I thought that whole situation was really strange because in the past, WWE has been very stubborn about not handing out releases to talent like Toni Storm or unhappy talent. They usually would wait for like a big wave to be released. But something happened there where I don't know if it's a new approach to how they want to handle talent. I don't know if it's something personal between Toni Storm and someone in WWE, but it does seem like there has been a change that led to her being released when other people in the past who have requested it have been kept on.
Yeah, with her, the thing is, her soon to be husband, Juice Robinson, also apparently his contract is up from New Japan in January. So there could be something where maybe there's a package deal somewhere. That kind of remains to be seen there. But yeah, we haven't really heard kind of the full story yet. I think it'll be an interesting one when we do. And to your point earlier, they really didn't do much with her, even when she was called up. Like when I was doing the recap story for the website, or the news story rather, I was kind of looking back at how much she had been working. And since like July, I mean, she'd had like, I think 5 matches through like from when the call up happened through like the end of November, it was like 5 matches total. And that was to me just, that included like house shows and all that stuff. They just weren't using her. It was just very strange. It was almost like they were like, and I don't think this was the case, but it felt like they're almost like contractually obligated to call her up. And then when they did, they're like, well, we're going to use her as sparingly as possible. Now they're going to get her in this SmackDown title program. And then it just was, I don't know, just very, very odd for someone that people seem to like. And again, she had a fan base out there, and when people were kind of like, well, why aren't they using her? And all of a sudden she's gone. So yeah, I'll be interested to see where she shows up next and kind of what she wants to do at this point. She's still young. I think she's 26 or 27, something like that. So she had plenty of years ahead of her.
I think she's like 25.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So
let me see.
Yeah. So plenty of years ahead to figure it out and kind of make a name for herself. If AEW is a spot, then yeah, I mean, they have already, and we've talked about this before, but such a loaded roster as it is now, where do you fit her in that roster? Is it just a case of just collecting more and more assets and so on? But yeah, I'll be interested to see what, with Hardy, it depends if he wants to do the wrestling thing. Financially, I'm sure he's pretty well set. The first thing people react is, the kind of the fan service thing. Oh, I want to see the Hardys versus the Young Bucks in AEW or something like that. And that wasn't really my first instinct. I wasn't thinking, I can't wait to see Jeff Hardy in, a regular AEW program, because I think kind of the Matt Hardy thing has fell flat. And I think there's other people they could sign could help a little bit more. Kairi Sane would be interesting, obviously. And that the relationship they have with Japanese talent, I think that could definitely happen. And yeah, with Toni Storm, it's, it'd be kind of fascinating to see how all three are used or where kind of what they want to do and who is interested in them.
With Jeff in AEW, I don't really have a lot of interest in a Hardy Boys reunion. You could do it, and it would probably do like a good number if you did something like Hardy Boys versus Young Bucks on an episode of Dynamite. Physically, Matt, to me, just looks pretty bad when he's in the ring. He's not like a complete embarrassment, but it's not someone I'm particularly excited about to see wrestle. Jeff, for all of the talk, you know, especially when he's younger, about how, oh, he's going to end up in a wheelchair. Oh, he's going to, how many of these bad bumps can he take? He won't be able to walk when he's 40. Still looks pretty good. Like we've seen him in his use in WWE, like when he's out there, he takes, you know, big bumps still. He still has a reasonably high baseline for work. And I do think that he is a bigger individual star than Matt. I don't think that's really controversial to say. And I do think that there would be something into a Darby Allin and Jeff Hardy match.
You know, Darby out. Just thinking that same thing. Yeah, potentially. Yeah, yeah.
Like, that's so easy to do, that if Jeff is right and he wants to work, that seems to me like a layup. And you can do a lot of stuff with him because I think he can still go in a way that I think Matt is still trying to figure out how to present himself in AEW. It's been really kind of a lot of trial and error in that regard. But at the same time, like, can you bring Jeff in and just keep him totally separate from Matt? You have to kind of do something to explain why they're not just tag teaming like everyone would expect to do. But I think he's someone that you would bring in, obviously, if you got the chance. I think all three of these people you would bring in if you're AEW. I think Toni Storm could walk into AEW and be one of the two or three best women in that division pretty much instantly. I think she's really talented. I think she's got a ton of charisma. I think she's pretty good as a wrestler and could potentially get even better. I just think she has – I think there's something about her personally that I feel like would be really marketable to, like, teenagers, especially young girls. I always thought when she was on the indies, I said she's going to be a big star in WWE because I can see her being really popular with teenage girls because she has the right kind of look and attitude that I think would appeal to that demographic. Not that I'm an expert on teenage girls, but it just seemed like something that would get over big. And again, they never really tried in WWE, but I think in AEW, she could be a big star.
And speaking of someone that gets over with teenage girls, Kevin Owens re-signing with WWE during the month. That was interesting news because, again, there had been some, you know, the news came out at the end of January that his contract was going to be up. And there was, you know, he'd obviously been in the system a long time. Kind of has hit his, I would say, creative ceiling, but, you know, he is what he is. And I think fans were kind of hoping, or at least fans on the outside were, so to speak, were hoping that maybe he would be given a chance to, get maybe a little bit more of a different run and AEW and kind of reunite with some of his old pals. You know, he did the change the Twitter location in 2021 for a bit and, you know, saying basically a direction to Mount Rushmore, you know, a tie back to the whole the Bucks and Adam Cole thing back in the day, PWG. And he ended up re-signing only for 3 years, which I thought was interesting. And, you know, the money was good, but never really decided to go to free agency. And he said this is, you know, a deal for his family. And obviously the money is good. And he seems to be happy. So, you know, as bummed as people will be that they're not going to see him in AEW, at least for another 3 years, good for him. He's able to get paid and he must like it there, you know, and this was the best move for him.
Well, you'd have to consider it a win for WWE, having lost some key talent over the years that had, you know, a chance to make millions of dollars in WWE, but ended up staying or choosing to go to AEW. You can look at Jon Moxley and you can look at Bryan Danielson as probably the two most prominent. And not everyone is going to be Jon Moxley, right? Not everyone's going to be in WWE and be super mad and frustrated with their creative direction and want to do something else. Some other people are going to be really comfortable and happy with how things are going in WWE. And I feel like that's seemed where Kevin Owens was at. He mentioned, I think, in his statement that, yeah, it's for my family, but it's a comfortable deal. And he's very comfortable in WWE. Selfishly, as a fan of Kevin Steen when he was in Ring of Honor, would be really interested to see him, what he would do with, I think, more creative freedom in AEW. But ultimately, you know, he was happy in WWE. And I mean, who's to say, you know, oh, he would be happier somewhere else. He clearly likes WWE and he's clearly happy to stay there. And he's being, you know, well compensated within the scope of what WWE pays people. I don't know, like, you have, we'll talk, maybe talk about it later, but like, people talked about Kevin Owens like, oh, but he's making so much money. And it's like, he's making a lot of money compared to most people in wrestling, but does that really mean he's making like as much money as he should make?
Yeah.
That's something that's kind of like some, one of the discussion points is like, oh, Kevin Owens, he got so much money. He got the bag. He got, you know, it's like, well, you know, WWE could probably afford to pay him multiple times of what they probably offered him. But that's a kind of a different topic.
So let's go over the rest of this list. We'll talk about a little bit of money here. Vince McMahon documentary series was set to, it was announced as debuting in 2022 on Netflix. Stephanie McMahon said that during an interview. We're not sure when, but they're spending a ton of money on it. And yeah, WWE's mining of IP, I think, is going to continue in 22 and ahead. The NIL Next in Line program was announced with college athletes. And the first class of that group was announced. Of course, Stevenson's, the blonde twins from, I think, Fresno State that play basketball. They're very popular on TikTok. Speaking of teenage girls and all that good stuff. And yeah, so they the full first class, we'll see how the NIL program turns out in the long run. Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns, it was learned they were making about $5 million each guaranteed per year, with some of the other top talent there making between $2 and $3 million. That was their range for top stars. You talked about Kevin Owens a few minutes ago. That was rumored that hit the range of his deal was in. The day one card shape. Day one just happened a couple days ago. Again, taking shape. Brock Lesnar versus Roman Reigns. Edge versus Miz. Migos set to make an appearance as well. Becky Lynch and Liv Morgan in a rematch. And then a four-way was finalized for the WWE title. Of course, COVID would certainly change all that. Xia Li debuted on SmackDown. Jerry Lawler signed a new WWE contract. All right. DVDs and Blu-rays were done in the United States starting in 2022. Xavier Woods returned to his Up, Up, Down, Down channel. We just talked about that in November, where creators had not uploaded any content in a couple months because essentially because Woods was not getting paid any extra for Up, Up, Down, Down. It was counted against his downside, as well as his G4 appearances, which are absolutely ridiculous. They count against his WWE downside. But Xavier Woods returning to the channel, so apparently something was worked out there. Rey Mysterio animated series was announced as coming to Cartoon Network Latin America. Brian Gewirtz announced he was going to release a book on his time with WWE. I believe that comes out in March. Ring of Honor women's champion Roxy, a wanted woman these days, was at the tryouts that WWE held in Florida, where they had a lot of different indie talent there, in addition to some other athletes. So perhaps they're not turning their noses up at indie talent altogether. Kevin Owens, just talking about him a minute ago, said that Ring of Honor didn't ask WWE talent to appear in the full battle video or any full battle videos that were aired that during that pay-per-view, where a lot of former or a lot of AEW stars that used to be in Ring of Honor kind of gave some shout-outs to Ring of Honor and so on. But Kevin Owens saying that they didn't ask any WWE talents to be in that. Bobby Stevenson, a.k.a. Damon Kemp, Nikita Lyons, and Lash Legend made their 205 Live debuts. This story broke, obviously, over the last week or so, week and a half, WWE COVID positives, just like around the country, around the world, spiking just before the holiday tour they were set to go on, essentially two shows a day for 10 days. And they held some talent off some shows kind of for insurance to make sure that they were able to get to day one. We're not sure who, but a lot of different talent missed. The top talent missed some of these shows. December shows in Quebec and Toronto were canceled due to their government canceling or lockdowns, rather. And then early in the month of January, Canada tour was postponed as well. WWE no longer requiring COVID testing unless people have symptoms. Jimmy Yang, no longer producer with WWE after a tryout. And it was initially reported that it was his decision. Then he said he would never quit. It was actually WWE's decision. So regardless, Jimmy Yang, no longer a producer with WWE after a short tryout. Eric Bischoff, back for more cash, returned to officiate the Maurice Miz vow renewal ceremony and get some black blood dumped on him as a result. And then Bill Goldberg confirming he has one match left on his WWE contract. There's a little bit there to chew on. Jesse, what do you got?
I'll throw in one more thing that you didn't list, which was, yeah, despite the fact that you listed so many different things, I would throw in one more would be December 26th holiday Madison Square Garden show for WWE, drawing what I think was the third lowest total for WWE Madison Square Garden in, or I think the third smallest crowd for wrestling in Madison Square Garden history or something like that.
Yeah.
They drew like, they drew 6,800 with tickets, but I think they drew like under 6,000 paid. And I know Dave had some of the numbers in the last issue of the Observer of how that's historically been one of their most successful shows of the year. They mostly do like 13 or 14,000 fans, and for this year to only do 6,000 or so fans, I think after is just another in a string of what I would call disappointing numbers in the New York City market for WWE. I think might end up being one of the more interesting data points from December for a show that, like I said, one of the biggest of the year, usually, you know, close to a sellout, if not a total sellout, to only do that small of a figure. Really interesting, you know, the trend for WWE ticket sales, particularly in the New York City area, and kind of how they've struggled to move tickets.
Yeah, that was looking at some notes here. At one point, it was around 5,300 tickets distributed just prior to the event. So we had a little walk up in a little bit. But yeah, David said usually those shows do around 14,000. And to your point, they're a company's best-selling non-televised, yes, that events of the year. And then, yeah, that's definitely a surprise. You know, they're blaming Omicron and, just other things. But yeah, I think a little bit is the... it's just interest in the product. And yeah, I think data point wise, I think that'll be something a year from now, because they're going to obviously, I would assume, run MSG again, because this is kind of their holiday tradition. I guess we'll see how things end up a year from now and all that. Let's flip to NXT, and not a ton going on here in terms of big news. Some of the stuff we already kind of really knew about, but you know, I think the continued changing of the guard in NXT with War Games, team 2.0, so to speak, winning the men's war game match, and it looked to be the end for Johnny Gargano. We'll talk about that in a second. Cameron Grimes winning a hair versus hair match. Johnny Gargano, again, saying goodbye on the Tuesday show after War Games and being attacked by Grayson Waller. So kind of indicated that maybe he might be back. However, he launched a Twitch channel, YouTube channel, PWT store, basically the day that he was set to be officially free. We don't really know where Johnny Gargano is going to go, but you know, all indications are might not be back with WWE, and there's a lot of considerations there. And yeah, we'll get back to that in a minute. Beth Phoenix announced she was leaving the commentary team, however, she was sticking with WWE. We would see her at day one. Joseph Connors of NXT UK was a free agent. New Year's Evil announced a set for January. That coming up, obviously, in a couple weeks. It might even be this week. Matt Riddle was revealed to be MSK Shaman. Harland made his debut. Mustache Mountain won the NXT UK Tag Team titles. Saray returned to the United States after spending some time in Japan. And I mentioned, as I just talked about, that New Year's Evil card was set. Braun Breaker, Tommaso Ciampa NXT title rematch. And also a title unification match between Carmelo Hayes and Roderick Strong. The dreaded cruiserweight title. Vince hates those cruiserweight titles. And going up against the North American title, and the titles are going to be unified. And then Grayson Waller made his debut on Raw. And AJ Styles returned to made an appearance on NXT to confront him. So who knows where we're going to get down the road between those two guys. Thoughts on Gargano's future or any of the other stuff that happened in NXT over the month?
Well, when NXT a few months ago, when it rebranded to NXT 2.0, and they instituted all these changes and they introduced all these new characters, it still had some veins of the old NXT, mainly because you had figures like Johnny Gargano, Adam Cole, Kyle O'Reilly, these guys, Tommaso Ciampa hanging around, still, some of the most important people associated with NXT still around. But it does seem like December really being kind of like the phasing out period of all those guys, with the exception of Ciampa. And with Gargano, look, we know O'Reilly's gone. Looks like Gargano's gone. I'm really interested just seeing what NXT looks like in 2022 from a fan perspective. Like, I don't really care what they do from like a talent development standpoint. They want to just say we were pushing all these really young guys, these green talents. That's fine, do that. But from a fan interest perspective, I'd be really interested to see what ends up happening with NXT, because ever since they went to 2.0, after like the first week of 2.0, it just seems like nobody cares about NXT anymore. I think their viewership has held up actually pretty good, even though it's down, like considering that they've like basically got rid of all the characters people liked and are replacing them with new people. But I don't know, from your perspective, Josh, you know, working and helping run a site that covers wrestling news, I don't know if NXT stuff is people are showing the same interest in NXT coverage as they used to. I know I see way less NXT stuff on social media. It can be a Tuesday night. I don't know anyone who's really like following NXT that closely. It just doesn't seem like it has any buzz at all right now. And I think you can point to like getting rid of all of the characters basically everyone liked or became familiar with and replacing them with future WWE superstars.
Yeah.
It just seems like I don't know if like how long NXT can remain like a viable, entertaining brand that people want to tune into each week and people feel worthy is covering, worth, you know, dedicating coverage to it, is worth having podcast recaps of it. I don't know what the return is going to end up being on that, because it does seem like it's just kind of, you know, fading away from an interest perspective.
Yeah, I think, you know, the thing that NXT had going for during the black and gold era was there was, it seemed to appeal, I think it appealed to fans that still kind of like not fully lapsed, but they're like, I don't like WWE, but I'll give this a shot, because, you know, it was kind of like a super indie in a lot of ways. And it gave people things that they wanted. You know, it provided moments, it provided excitement, it provided everything that WWE wasn't. And almost, I think, to some people, gave an ounce of hope that maybe someday that could come back to the main roster, because if it's happening in one element of the system, why couldn't it happen in another? Right. And I look back in some of the moments, some of these I've talked about on the show, even during the series, because other people have lamented kind of what happened in NXT and kind of since the 2.0 era began. But they just, you know, those takeover events were, when they were happening during WWE pay-per-view weekends, they were often better than the pay-per-view, more anticipated, and they were still, I mean, they were selling out big arenas in order to do so. And this 2.0, it feels like I think the fans that were kind of like happy to enjoy it and because it wasn't WWE, I think they're really getting driven off or frustrated, because it's the future, and the future is always fun, but it's a future in like WWE, and it just doesn't feel right anymore. And the in-ring action isn't good. They're having, I mean, I look at some of these call-ups that they have. I don't really call us, but people they're giving debuts to, these are people that just signed like earlier this year and never wrestled a match in their life, and they're putting them on TV. That just, to me, that's just way too fast. And, you know, at some point that has to catch up, because people want an in-ring product that is good and something that's entertaining. Cause ultimately it is about the in-ring, no matter what, you know, Vince McMahon or anyone else seems to want to deflect away from. And you can have your breakers who are standouts and, you know, your, Carmelo Hayes and Ciampa's and things like that, but the rest of the card also has to be good too. So the interest level, it's just more of a, it's more the lament I hear from the WWE product has bled over to NXT. And yeah, they have an interesting 2022 ahead, and especially because they're on a network that, you know, they're paying them and they want people to watch. So if numbers are dwindling again or something like that, we'll see if there's a change.
Yeah, I mean, the original NXT, like you said, it allowed people frustrated with WWE, with the main roster, to still remain connected with WWE and still feel like they're watching WWE. They just weren't watching the main roster because they were frustrated by it. And NXT was essentially indie wrestling for people who had never watched indie wrestling before.
Yeah.
In a way. Obviously, there are other people who were big fans of indie wrestling that liked NXT a lot too, but it was kind of like a way to introduce people who were primarily WWE-only fans to non-WWE style wrestling, or at least non-Vince McMahon 2010s style wrestling. And now it's just, the change is so dramatic. Like, it went from NXT used to have the best wrestling on TV to, you know, some of the worst matches we've seen on television in 2021 happened in NXT 2.0. And it went from being this place that was WWE, but different than WWE, to being WWE, but like over the top, like almost a parody of WWE with some of this, you know, those, the wacky characters and the way stuff was filmed and the comedy. And it's just, it's really strange. It's very odd to look at. It's very odd to see like the attempts at catering towards a younger audience. I think someone pointed out to me that like the way they, someone dresses the announcers to look like cool and hip, and it's like clearly not the announcers' real clothes.
Yeah.
And once you see that, you can't unsee it. And the attempts to get over, you know, Mandy Rose, like it's like 1999 Sable all over again. Like it's just a weird, weird, weird product. And I don't know if it has a place like in the Discord of wrestling conversations in 2022.
Yep. Good point. Let's flip to AEW, who had a very interesting month bookended by the good and then the head scratching. And we'll get to both here as we lead off. So the first part was Bryan Danielson and Hangman Adam Page, the new AEW world champion, as it were, at this point, making his first title defense at Winter is Coming. And the match went to a 60-minute draw, which I think was, as the match was going, it kind of seemed like it was leading in that direction. And then the draw happened. It was kind of like, are we going to get a few more minutes or what's going to happen? Then it was just kind of like, you know, hopefully we see this again and to the back, let's move on to the next thing. Obviously, because it took up the first hour of the show. Their rematch set for their TBS debut, which is coming up this Wednesday. This Wednesday. What am I talking about? Yeah, this Wednesday on their TBS debut. The match was great. I didn't love the draw, and I understand where they're now, where they're going with it. But at the point, I was like, eh. I love the Omega Danielson draw. This, I don't know if it was just because it was Danielson again or what have you, but it just, for some reason, like it worked. But there also is kind of the build to this to me. Like Danielson was wrestling every single week in there and having really great matches against different wrestlers and really kind of coming into his own with this new kind of heelish gimmick that he's doing. And Paige was basically non-existent for, you know, a long time and it was, you know, done a couple of promos, but I don't know. It's just, there were a couple of things about it. Just him not being in the ring was kind of, and then all of a sudden, they have the draw and the draw kind of ends. It's like, all right, I don't know. It was good, but there was something about it that just didn't quite work for me. What about you?
Well, Paige hasn't wrestled that much since he won the title.
I don't think he's wrestled at all, has he?
I'm trying to think if he's had, I can look it up, of course, but I'm trying to think if he's had a match besides the 60-minute draw. And so naturally I would say, well, maybe he's injured. But then again, he wrestled like a brilliant 60-minute match. So he clearly can't be that injured. He's only had that one match since November 13th. So, I mean, I thought this was the best television match I've ever seen in my life. I can't really think of one I would think would be better. It was exactly what we wanted to be. It didn't do very well, like from like a viewership standpoint or especially in the key demo, which I thought was seen as like a massive disappointment, but it's hard to make a ruling, like a true judgment on that, because since that match, you know, ratings for AEW have begun to rebound and they'll definitely banking on it doing really well this Wednesday. I like the draw, but I also understand why some people didn't like it. I also think that AEW has to, and I'm not saying this about you, Josh, but about other people, AEW has to educate people on like there's different ways to do things. And there are a lot of people really frustrated by the draw because WWE doesn't do draws. And, you know, that's what they know. And AEW's kind of got to teach these people that there's other ways to do pro wrestling. And you don't, if you wanted, you know, if WWE was booking that match, they would have done a screwdrop finish or a DQ or a double countout or something so they could then run it back the next week. AEW decided it was a 60-minute draw. But that's, I think, one of the interesting elements about AEW is that they are going to have to educate people on different ways to do things. And they're still in that process after a few years. Like I said, I'm not saying that about you.
Oh, feel free to say it about me. Yeah.
No, because I don't think your criticism was related to that. I don't think your criticism was like, oh, I don't know, I've never seen a draw before. But there were, if you went on social media afterwards, there were a lot of people that were like, what a draw? Like, it blew their minds, like, that they would do a draw for a match. When in the old days, and I know Carl Stern was on this earlier, but like, that was all they did was 60-minute draws for the world title. Mm-hmm. They did a 60-minute Broadway. So I thought it was interesting. I do think that the build for the match was more about establishing Danielson as a heel and not as much about Paige as a babyface. And I do think that Paige is still in a formative part of his career, where you're not done making him a big star just because he won the world title. It's really important that this world title run goes good for him. And I think the match was great, and I think it was a good start, and I think he did a good job on the promos after the match, you know, the Dynamite afterwards. But I think it's still a upward climb for Adam Page, and you still have to be pretty careful with how you present him. And yeah. I don't know if, like, December was like, or especially particularly more like November, particularly the build up to this match did a great job establishing him as that kind of superstar baby face that you expect him to be.
Yeah, I was surprised, because coming out of, you know, going into that, and obviously the title win was a moment in itself, but afterwards it just, I think you had to have him a little bit more active, and I know they kind of want to hold off the title matches or whatever. It just, yeah, for I there's something just that is just not there. And if something's going on, you know, we haven't heard anything yet, but you know, it just is, he just hasn't been really like a presence as much as you'd want. I think your brand new world champion to be, when I think of like the other champions, like, you know, Moxley, Omega, and Jericho, like, I just don't remember them like immediately kind of just not, their build to their next match I thought was bigger, and they're more of a presence. And with Paige, I mean, he's the lesser star of those people I just mentioned, but he has potential to be pretty big. And just for some reason, and I think we'll see what happens on Wednesday. I think if the time is to beat Danielson, I would have thought it would have been at Winter's Coming, but you know, I don't think they're going to go another 60-minute draw on Wednesday, but I guess we'll have to see kind of how they handle that and how he looks coming out of that. And obviously what he moves on to next. Cause I think that next program is going to be pretty important. And this is also a rare rematch too. They've only done, I believe I've looked back at this, there was only one other world title rematch they've had, which was Omega and Moxley at the Exploding Deathmatch, Barbed Wire Deathmatch. After that, I mean, they haven't done, people that lose the title, like, never get a rematch. It's kind of one of those AEW things. Same with the tag team titles and everything else.
Yeah, and to kind of with your point about Paige, and you know, say like not being like as big of a presence. Also a really strange time for AEW when you look at December. No Chris Jericho for a portion of December, but he wasn't there for multiple weeks. No Jon Moxley, no Kenny Omega. Probably the three guys you pushed the most during the first 2 years of your company's existence, your first three world champions, all guys who were major, major, major stars. You know, not on the product at all. And that's a big difference for AEW. Those are three guys that were key focal points every week. I wonder if you go back and look at one of those three guys probably wrestled once per week pretty much for the entire show's existence. And obviously now you have Bryan Danielson, you have CM Punk, you have guys who weren't there at the start of the company that you can rely on for to be like your big stars. But you would think this would be a perfect opportunity for Paige to be more of a focal point on Dynamite, and he really hasn't been.
Yeah, big January for him, and for seeing what AEW does with him, and that starts this Wednesday. And then I mentioned it's kind of this bookend month. So, you know, I always like to do these year in reviews after the 31st, because as we know, shit happens on 31st too. You know, people get released in the UFC stuff, you know, fights happen. That's why I always would wait. And in the days leading up to the end of the year, all of a sudden, you know, Big Swole did a announcement following her release about this, about kind of, you know, some issues she had with diversity and kind of why she was ready to part ways AEW. And then Tony Khan does this quote about people of color, and that, you know, the top two ranking officers are people of color, himself and someone else that works there as well. And that, you know, you mentioned he went through a bunch of the roster that has had like big wins and things like that. It was just a tweet. It just didn't really find a home because it just really wasn't necessary. I understand he felt like he had to defend his company. I think there's probably a different way of doing that. And it just didn't make him look good. And some of his talents didn't really care for. It just was an unnecessary miscue for a criticism that your talents when you part ways them. He hasn't had this happen a lot because he hasn't let a lot of people go. He's going to get more of this in 22. There's going to be people that are like, I didn't like how things were run there, and this is why. And he can't comment on every single one of them, especially when it comes to issues of race or things like that. There's so much that can get misconstrued on social. He's got so much going for the company and so many things going right. It's just, he doesn't take criticism well. And I think he's really going to find a way to kind of fix that to avoid gaffes like this in the future, which have some stickiness, which I think the situation does.
Yeah. So I think this was it's hard to say. Like, I would say this would be his personally Tony's like biggest unforced error since AEW started. There's been mistakes made with AEW throughout its existence, like any company would have, but this one seemed like just such an avoidable thing to do. It's hard to say like how big of a deal this is going to be on December 31st and in January 1st. It felt like, oh my God, this is a huge story. And now a few days have gone by. I feel like it's maybe not as big of a deal as it appeared a few days ago, which is often the case. To me, my thoughts on it are basically, he clearly was mad about something that Big Swole said, but it was very tactless to put all of this stuff in a tweet and then send it out while also plugging like your show.
Oh, that's right. The Rampage plug after. Well, yeah. Yeah.
For starters, in the same tweet, he plugs his own show. He lists like all of these African-American talents that have gotten wins on TV in AEW, which is fine. But you also kind of put those people on the spot because you're putting them in the same tweet where you're like, I fired Big Swole because she was bad at wrestling. I didn't renew her contract because she wasn't good enough in the ring. I just think all of this would have been so much better if he didn't tweet it out. And if he was really frustrated by what Big Swole has said, call up one of your media buddies, do an interview. You can further eloquate on, you know, some of the diversity initiatives you have in the company, some of the names that you're pushing. You can even elaborate on why Big Swole didn't get her contract renewed in AEW. You could do all that. Just don't do it on Twitter. It's the worst forum to do that. And it came across as very unnecessary and put some of his talent, I think, in maybe a difficult spot. I know Ricky Starks, I think, deactivated his Twitter account. And maybe that's just a coincidence that he did that after that. But he was, of course, one of the people named in the tweet. I just for someone who I think has been very, very successful in their job, a really unnecessary mistake.
I would agree. Let's go through the rest of the month here. Some returns, some debuts. We had Trent, Anthony Ogogo, Brandi Rhodes back in action and debuting over the course of the month on various programs. Marina Shafir, Josh Woods, Jake Atlas, Kyle O'Reilly, and then the man himself, Hook, who kind of took over social media for the month. And I have my concerns, my maybe unfounded concerns, that they're going to push him a little bit too hard. It's another one of those guys Tony Khan seems to be really into. It's fun. I just hope it's not too much too soon and people get burned out, because as you know, in society, we love to build people up to burn them, tear them down. So we'll see what happens with Hook. I think he's got a bright future. Obviously, I just hope they can contain themselves and, you know, slow drip, not the full pour right away with Hook. We'll talk about that more in a minute. Brody King reportedly has signed with the company and maybe part of Malakai Black's House of Black faction. Mercedes Martinez returned, surprised last week, and signed a deal after that, a couple of years after she first debuted in the company. They brought back the Dynamite Diamond, the old Dynamite Diamond Battle Royal, and then MJF winning it for a third time for some reason. Austin Gunn joined the reality show called Relatively Famous. I have never heard of this in my life. Revolution set for Orlando in March. Tony Khan said he was mulling an offer on letting AEW talent appear in WWE documentaries, as WWE had recently reached out to him. to ask to put in that request. Chris Jericho missed at least one Fozzy date due to he was hospitalized, but it was due to a non-COVID illness. Was fine after that, and he just again returned to TV just the other day. WWE was reportedly interested, or has interest in MJF, and so does Fox and USA, who have taken notice of him and see the Punk promo that aired earlier in the month, and are very interested. So we'll see what happens in 2024. You know, MJF not playing that up at all with the bidding war thing. We learned that the Owen Hart tournament, there was going to be both men's and women's. It's going to start at some point, early 2022, and the finals would take place at Double or Nothing. Still waiting to get more details about that. Britt Baker versus Rio, title match announced for the first ever Battle of the Belts, which takes place this Saturday. Sammy Guevara, engagement controversy, and Tay Conti controversy, and apparently they are indeed together as they shared a photo of them kissing on New Year's Eve. So whatever you think of that, have at it. Cody Rhodes reclaimed the TNT title on the Christmas Night edition, rather, of Rampage, defeating the aforementioned Sammy Guevara. Longtime producer Keith Mitchell retiring. Jim Ross returned to the booth and is cancer-free. And Jake Roberts battling COVID. Thoughts on any of that?
Out of all of those things, I'm really, really interested in Hook. And there's something about the energy in the building when he is in the ring. And we've only seen two matches, so I don't want to get ahead of myself. But let me know if you think I'm crazy. Like a year from now, he could be like the biggest star in all of wrestling.
The biggest
Like a scenario exists where that can happen, and it's not infeasible.
If they gave him a Goldberg-esque streak, like, you know, him not losing and just beating everybody, I wonder how that would go over. I don't know. I think with so many guys there, it's possible if they saw that he was, if they felt like he was the guy, like the difference maker. But I think part of it is, you know, AEW fans are so plugged in on social. He became such like a social media phenomenon in a sense, you know, the send Hook and stuff up before he even debuted. I wonder if it's part of that. It's possible. I am interested to see what the next few months bring. And again, if Tony Khan can resist just like the spot I didn't like in the last match was, you know, he stood up from that that pile driver and just like got right up and didn't and no sold it. I didn't realize there was other people that didn't like that as well until I saw a random Taz tweet about it, because apparently he had heard about it, of course. And I'm like, oh, I guess it wasn't just me that thought that was kind of like, huh, he just popped right up after that pile driver and whatever. I guess we'll have to see with Hook. It is very possible. Anything is possible in wrestling. Put it that way. I think we know that. But, you know, he's got the tool set. I want to see a little bit more before I can make that call.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that is a in some ways a crazy statement to
it's
think.
It's wild. I like it though.
I'm not saying it's gonna happen, but like I said, there's something about the energy in the building. And you mentioned that AEW fans are plugged in the internet, and Hook is a meme. Okay, yeah. He is. The idea of let's get really excited about Hook debuting is obviously something that has probably been played up to a higher degree by online than maybe the general public is aware of. But if you are watching on television and the crowd is really into him and there's like this energy in it, that will transfer over to the viewer at home who's not like a hardcore AEW social media follower person. They'll see in that way that like, oh, this guy is really over with the – if someone's really over to the live crowd, eventually they – become over to the TV viewing crowd. Historically, that's how it worked. Greg Goldberg was over in the arenas before it kind of transferred to like Goldberg's, you know, quarter hours doing rail over. He started turning into an actual draw. Starts with the live crowd being into it. And it's not like it's 10% of the crowd that's really into Hook. It's 60%. It's 75%. So I think you can push him in a way where he doesn't really take up a lot of time. He just, because that's how Goldberg was pushed, right? He didn't like take up a ton of time on his shows. He wasn't like, oh, our main event tonight is going to be Goldberg squashing some guy. It was Goldberg would come out for 5 minutes, you know, in a match that probably wasn't even announced before the show started, and beat somebody, and people were into it. And then they'd move on to like the real main event thing. And he was able to grow in the background of a broader main event picture, I guess. And he just got more over and over and over where you couldn't deny him anymore. And I feel like that's almost like where Hook is headed. If he is able to maintain this momentum, it could be just the meme wears off, people stop caring about it.
Yeah.
I think when he took that over the shoulder pile driver and he stood up, I thought it was awesome. No selling is awesome. Like, you clearly, my last article for Voices of Wrestling was right. It was titled like "No Selling Rules." And I understand why people don't like it. Logically, I understand how you reach the conclusion, how people say, I don't like, someone standing right up after a pile driver. It makes the whole thing look fake. I understand that. But look, when he stood up, the crowd went crazy. So, I just think there's something there with him, and it could be, we might look back on his debut this month, the way we look back at Goldberg versus Hugh Morris, right? That was Goldberg's first opponent, was Bill Lamont.
Yep.
As Hugh Morris, with Fuego del Sol, who was a bit of a meme in his own right, playing the role. I don't know. People say, oh, he's too small. He looks too young. He doesn't look like that. I mean, if the crowd believes he's a killer and the crowd believes that he's a badass, I don't think that's going to end up mattering.
Yeah.
But I think... It's added a very interesting wrinkle to AEW that you wouldn't expect from the company. We know they have, the Young Bucks are great, and Cody is really interesting, and MJF's awesome, and Kenny Omega, and Chris Jericho, and Bryan Danielson, and CM Punk. We know, like, their star power and stuff like that. But the weird, like, oh, here's this essentially undercard rookie who certain segments of the fan base can't get enough of is also here. It just makes the show more fun to watch.
Yeah,
when you have little things like that that you can hold on to and you can watch.
Yeah, and I expect him to be a fixture on Rampage for a while so they can get viewers there. I think when he makes his – I'm interested to see when he has his first Dynamite appearance, put it that way. I think that's a even further kind of call-up, so to speak, even though they try to treat Rampage seriously and everything. I think they're going to try to have that buoy, that those Friday night shows, for as long as they can. And then when he starts moving over to Wednesdays, that'll be interesting to see what happens. But yeah, it's to your point, yeah, it's a fun story, and I think one we're going to definitely see. I'm really interested to see develop in the next few months, and kind of see where we're at there. Let's go to Impact and Ring of Honor if we can, and we'll go through these both same time. One obviously more newsworthy than the other for a lot of reasons. Impact, their Hard to Kill card was set for January. Moose versus Cardona versus W. Morrissey, Josh Alexander versus Jonah, Texas Deathmatch stipulation added to Mickey James versus Deonna Purrazzo, and Jonathan Gresham defending the ROH Championship against Chris Sabin. They announced a 4-month mini tour, essentially, leading into Rebellion. That was their first shows outside either Vegas or Nashville since prior to the pandemic, so they're at least trying to get out there in some of these different markets and run some different venues. And I think that's good for them. Jeff Jarrett said that Don West battling cancer for a second time. Jonah, we just talked about him, his deal, he said is up at the end of April. And Sue Young announced she was pregnant in a very bizarre fashion on last Thursday's Best of 2021 second show. And then Roxy, you mentioned her a couple times, facing Deonna Purrazzo in January at an Impact TV taping. We now flip to ROH, who had what could be their final ever pay-per-view. Who knows what happens in a couple months and if they do come back. But if they do not, this was it. Final battle. Bandido off the show due to COVID. Big surprise. Jonathan Gresham defeating Jay Lethal for the vacant ROH championship. We'll talk more about that ROH title a little bit more in our junk drawer section. FTR made a surprise, challenging the Briscoes after Briscoes picked up a victory. We still don't know when that could be, but could be an AEW ring. Who knows? There were lots of videos from former Ring of Honor talent, including a ton from AEW. We talked about the Kevin Owens, non-WWE request before. Deonna Purrazzo, we just mentioned, challenged Roxy on this card, leading to the match that's going to happen on Impact TV in a couple weeks. Looks to be a winner-take-all affair for the AAA women's title, and then also for the ROH title. Could be for the Knockouts title, depending what happens on the Saturday. And then Braun Strowman appeared and aligned with EC3 to continue that whole free the narrative thing that hardly anyone cares about. Thoughts about any of that?
Well, like, they are kind of related, because I do think that Impact has a lot to gain if ROH does kind of go away forever. In the sense that I think they have a little bit more room to grow. The wrestling ecosystem has a little bit more space for a company like Impact, where if Ring of Honor goes away, and there obviously be talent available. We've seen, like you said, Roxy's already in Impact. We've seen, you know, Gresham is coming over to wrestle on Impact. You know, AEW is going to pick up some of that talent. We've already seen Jay Lethal get picked up. Looks like Brody King is also on his way to AEW. But I feel like Impact has a lot to gain from Ring of Honor kind of going away. And I mean, the Ring of Honor Final Battle Show, it was sad. It was sad to watch it. I was like sad to hear that it didn't seem like, at least I don't really know how popular it was. It didn't seem like there was a lot of buzz for it outside of people just kind of lamenting, oh, I'm sad that Ring of Honor is gone. Or this is their last show. I thought it was a good show. I liked a lot of the matches on the show. But it is just seems like such a weird time for wrestling. We don't really know what's going to happen to Ring of Honor. So it's hard to say. If they come back in March, what is it? Are they going to look like? Is it going to be like really sad when they come back in March and they have a skeleton crew because all of the best talent has been picked over? Is it going to be... are the talents that we're talking about right now, like Jonathan Gresham or Bandido, are they going to be around? It's all a very strange time for Ring of Honor, and I'm fearful of what we're going to see if we see anything out of them ever again. And the other shoe that would drop would be what's going to happen to their video library. It would seem like something that WWE would be interested in. They're always interested in video libraries. Would AEW be interested in it? What would AEW do with the Ring of Honor video library? Mm-hmm. I have no idea, but it's really hard to figure out what's going to happen with them.
Yeah. I guess we'll see in a couple months if they do come back. We'll start learning about, I would assume, in March, because obviously they're going to announce a return in April. You know, you got to start building some momentum. But yeah, to your point, it does Impact as a. I mean, look, they're going out on tour for a couple months. We'll see. You know, there's a lot of free agents available, and we'll see if they take advantage. Let's go to Japan. We'll run through this. Clark Connors said he had COVID and missed a few shows as a result. Stardom announces having a presence at the Wrestle Kingdom shows as in the past. Ian Riccaboni, speaking of Ring Honor, calling New Beginning USA, and Josh Barnett, Jonah, Finjuice, Leo Rush, Romero, and others, Rocky Romero, and others were announced for that New Beginning show, which happens later this month. Shibata announced his in-ring return at Wrestle Kingdom. Big announcement there. No strikes allowed. New Japan kind of laid out this whole rule set. Basically, you know, everything but strikes were allowed for that return coming up in just a matter of hours, what have you. Hiroki Goto and Yoshihashi won the World Tag League over Evil and Takahashi. Hiromu Takahashi won the... Evil and Yujiro Takahashi was World Tag League, flipped to the Best of Super Juniors tournament, happening at the same time. Hiromu Takahashi winning the tournament for the third time. The full cards for this week were announced. Road to Tokyo Dome was announced, and also the lineup for the New Japan versus Noah show, which seemed to be underwhelming to a lot of fans. New Japan Strong announced they were heading to Florida in March. There was a New Japan All Japan joint show announced for April. Toriyano was crowned the official King of Pro Wrestling champion during the month. The date for the 50th anniversary show, as well as the New Japan Cup dates, were announced. And then Jake Lee had to vacate the Triple Crown, GHC Triple Crown, due to injury. Thoughts on any of the Japanese happenings?
On that last bit, I'll comment on the Jake Lee having to vacate the title. I mean, I don't know how many people, All Japan Pro Wrestling kind of flies below the radar of most people these days. All Japan Pro Wrestling's like pretty bad. A lot of people would consider it probably the worst of the relatively major promotions in Japan this year. Maybe some people who really hated Kijimuto winning the GHC World Championship in Noah would say that Noah was worse. But All Japan has really struggled for a very long time, like over two decades. And in the mid-2000s, they were really bad, which is when I kind of first started watching them on a regular basis, which was really only for historical purposes. I just knew All Japan was this famous old Japanese promotion, so I might as well start paying attention to them. Mm-hmm. And they had basically nobody that was really interesting, and they were fortunate enough they came up with Kento Miyahara to become their new ace and exciting star. But for the past 5 years, they've struggled to pair Kento Miyahara with any really interesting contemporaries. And this year was about Jake Lee. It was about, we're going to turn him heel. He's going to start his own heel faction. He's going to, you know, win the world title. It's going to be, Jake Lee is going to be the now rival for Kento Miyahara, and it's going to take us to a whole new level. And it just never took off. You know, he didn't get over the way I think they wanted him to as a heel. It was kind of an awkward fit. And then he got hurt, and then he had to vacate the title, and they're just hitting the reset button again. And it really stinks. If you like All Japan Pro Wrestling, they really struggle with talent development. They really struggle creating new, interesting stars. They've dropped the ball with a number of guys. And it just stinks that one of the guys that they really tried with just didn't work in 2021. And hopefully he can come back in 2022 and be good.
Let's go over, we have a lot of junk drawer stuff. We'll split this into two sections here. We'll start with a show I initially said happened in November, so a couple of people may be hearing this for the second time. NWA Hard Times 2. Mick Foley made an appearance on the show. All champions retained in 8 title matches that included Impact titles, Ring of Honor titles, and NWA titles. Austin Aries and Mike Knox returned for some reason. Dirty Dango and Matt Cardona made surprise appearances on the show. And DePope was also injured but ended up being okay. Kind of a scary scene there. Walter was announced at appearing at the WXW 21st anniversary show against Cara Noir. GCW making a lot of news throughout the month with future appearances and such. At Mosatori is coming up in Detroit. Sabu, Ricky Morton, Kevin Nash, Alex Shelley, and also some other Michigan natives. Dr. Wagner Jr. set to debut at GCW If I Die First. Negro Casas and Bandido GCW appearances were postponed. The Collective was back for, or said to be back for WrestleMania weekend. They also announced an Atlanta debut coming up. And then they had the Do or Die number one contender Rumble, which just happened this past weekend. And Homicide won that. So it's assumed that in January, I believe that's a date, that it'll be Jon Moxley perhaps returning on that show to defend his GCW title against Homicide. Dave Meltzer saying in our daily update on Monday, he's just like, I don't see how that can happen. Well, he's probably going to make an AEW return before that happens. I can't see Tony Khan having his return being a GCW show. I probably agree, but we'll see how that plays out. Jonathan Gresham defending that ROH title at GCW shows against Too Cold Scorpio, Blake Christian, etc. And also Rick Abani was going to call the ROH title match coming up at the World on GCW show at the Hammerstein Ballroom. Sky Too Hottie. Yes, Sky Too Hottie faced Joey Janela this past weekend at GCW Die for This. Tracy Smothers was announced as being inducted into GCW Hall of Fame. Triple Mania Regia, Heel Del Vikingo winning the AAA Mega title that was vacated due to Kenny Omega being injured, won that in a 5-way. FTR retained the tag team titles over the Lucha Brothers. Cain Velasquez returned to action, and also Taya Valkyrie and Cybernetico returning to the show. John Morrison, a.k.a. Johnny Mundo, a.k.a. John, Hennigan, I think they were called. I can't remember now. Challenging for the AAA Mega title at Randy Reyes against Vikingo. And also an FTR versus Lucha Brothers rematch was announced for January. And Dave Bautista was announced as starring in a new M. Night Shyamalan movie. Thoughts about any of that?
I can't believe how many different people you just listed being associated with GCW.
I know.
It couldn't have been a stranger mix of names, but that is GCW in a heartbeat, is just a smorgasbord of any type of wrestler, from old territory stars to teenagers to stars from Japan and Mexico. I'll talk about, like, the Hard Times pay-per-view, which I saw parts of. I just don't know what NWA is. I don't really know what their game plan is. And a lot of it comes down to, just if you look at their cards and you look at, like, who they have on their show, it's just a bunch of people who are just, oh, they were on, you know, WWE television at one point, so let's put them on our show. And it just doesn't come across as appealing to me at all as a fan who might be looking for, like, some quality wrestling out there. And I just don't know really know who the show is for. Is it for lapsed fans? Is it for classic NWA fans that remember the good old days of Jim Crockett Promotions or Memphis Wrestling or World Class Championship Wrestling or these, old NWA hotbed territories? It just it feels a lot of it a lot like the bad parts of TNA, where TNA would find someone for who had a little bit of TV time from WWE and then push them as a big star. And that's how you end up with someone like Mike Knox, main eventing your pay-per-view and challenging for the NWA World Heavyweight title. I'm just not quite sure what they're doing. And I'd like to see a little bit more like of a creative plan for NWA. And I think that's something they've struggled with after what I would consider a really bright, start to the whole relaunch from a few years ago.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're another promotion I think that will have a interesting 2022. I don't get bringing back guys like Aries just because of his kind of like, fans don't like him, especially on the internet, especially the anti-vax stuff, the mascot. Well,
Right.
just with just it's like it's just a strange like you've also
And
talent out there. You couldn't get like it's just odd, an odd choice.
when you're small and NWA is small, you like I don't think you have to like I think like a company like WWE, they can hire somebody who might be consider who might be an enemy of social media people, and it doesn't really matter because of WWE, they can just absorb that blow. But when you're small and you're NWA and you're looking for some grassroots growth, having someone like Austin Aries on your show. And I'll give it, Aries is someone who's, still in their prime and is, I haven't seen his matches recently, but I'm assuming he's still probably a really good wrestler because he always was. There's never a problem on that end. Like you bring him in, bringing someone in, him in, I don't think that's helping you at all. And it just, like you said, like they have a lot of, like they'll have, they should be theoretically around to pick up some of these ROH guys, to pick up some talent from the indies. They should be in the mix, but like, do they want to be, or do they want to sign, Mike Knox? Do they
Right.
want, or not to keep picking on Mike Knox because I don't really have anything against him, but you know what I mean? Like, it's like, do you want to sign that guy? Do you want, Tyrus to be on your show? Like, do you want to be in the mix for Jonathan Gresham or Bandido? Like, I just don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah, doesn't make any sense to me at all. Let's go to the rest of the junk drawer here. PWG, the Bola field was announced. Some of the names announced for the field this year. Jonah, Alex Shelley, Roosh, Black Taurus, Daniel Garcia, Jack Cartwheel, Bandido, Davey Richard, Jonathan Gresham, JD Drake, Buddy Matthews, and a few others. Jim Duggan announced he was cancer-free. Alberto El Patron, the kidnapping and sexual assault case was dismissed against him. DDP married a McMahon, Paige McMahon, not of the McMahon family, but that was a headline got picked up a few different places there. We had several deaths throughout the month. Blackjack Lanza, Jimmy Rave, dead at just 39 years old. His story is well documented all over the place. And then Corporal Kirshner passed away. Mike Kirshner dead at 64. There was this horrendous attack by Devin Nicholson on this ref at this this indie show. Kind of just a spot gone wrong. He denied it. Just it was just a bad scene, and yeah, the referee had to get a ton of staples in his head, and just was really just not cool at all. And who knows if Nicholson ever gets used again. Just an unfortunate scene at a Texas indie. Miranda Gordy announces making her MLW debut in January. Will Ospreay said that his MLW debut will happen. There's a story that we did about the essentially the MLW New Japan deal coming to an end, which is why Ospreay was not scheduled to compete for them in December. And later on, he said it will happen. So we'll see what goes on there. MLW Azteca, the long discussed Azteca Underground thing, the MLW wants to spin off into its own show. A miniseries of such is actually debuting this week. Alexander Hammerstone, their world champion, re-upping with the company for multiple years. They also announced a Decoded series, which kind of goes behind the scenes and focuses on single talent at a time. Davey Richards re-signed with the company for multiple years. Jody Fleisch, for those that remember 90s wrestling, getting an MLW middleweight title shot against Tajiri, also for people that like 90s wrestling. MLW announced they're heading to Charlotte for their February Super Fight Show, so getting out of Philadelphia for a while, it's just good for them. There's a big data breach story regarding PWTs, which may have affected some users, maybe more than they let on. They sent out letters instead of emails. I don't know, just kind of a whole story with PWTs. Progress Wrestling was sold at the very end of the month, and they announced they were going to be resuming live shows under the new owners in the year ahead. And then Bandido was defending. So the kind of a storyline, I mentioned Jonathan Gresham a couple times. So it sounds like he is, because he never officially lost the title in the Ring of Honor, he's defending his version of the Ring of Honor title at the Terminus event, which is co-owned by Gresham and Moose. And then also, or sorry, Baron Black, rather. Moose is going to be at the show. And then Gresham's defending his version of the title against Josh Alexander at that show as well. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with the Ring of Honor title. It's kind of cool that Gresham is going to go around to different indies. Like you said, he's going to be at the, he's going to be at GCW. He's going to Impact, which isn't an indie, obviously, but he's going to, he has his own indie. He's kind of going around as this touring champion, and he's going to wrestle the top guys from those kind of different promotions or guys who are associated with those different promotions. And it's a real kind of grassroots effort, I think, to increase interest in Ring of Honor title. And obviously it seems like Gresham's kind of got a lot of leeway on what he can do with it. I don't know how much direction he's getting from, ROH's offices or what's left of ROH's offices, yeah. But it'll be interesting to see like how much interest is going to be in his title defenses. And if people start talking about them, because I'm sure the matches in general will probably be really good because he's such a good wrestler and he's wrestling some pretty good talent, especially like this Josh Alexander Gresham match, could be one of the best indie matches of 2022. I'd be really interested to see. And it'll be interesting to see how popular Terminus is. Is this something that is going to come and go and nobody really talks about it? Or is it going to be like this new concept for independent wrestling that people are going to be talking about? I think there's room for something like that, especially with Ring of Honor kind of being phased out of the picture. So that's interesting. The Battle of Los Angeles lineup, I think, looks really good. I find the direction they're going kind of interesting, where when, you would think that it's PWG. When AEW started, I kind of thought that a lot of AEW talent would be in PWG, and I kind of thought it would be like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and like these really like guys who had been PWG legends who were now huge stars and they'd be coming back to PWG. But that hasn't been the case. There's AEW talent in PWG, but it's people like Daniel Garcia. It's people who are looking to who are still young and feel like kind of people that would be on PWG if they weren't signed to AEW. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to be, I think it's really cool. I think that it creates a really cool, interesting thing where it kind of keeps the spirit of PWG alive, as opposed to it just being this company that is now suddenly pretty closely associated with a major wrestling promotion. If that makes any sense, it still feels like PWG because someone like Daniel Garcia is going to be the guy who's going to be getting the rub and getting the experience working in it, as opposed to, oh, we're just going to now pulverize you with huge, huge stars, which they could maybe be capable of doing because of the close relationship between PWG and Excalibur and AEW management.
Yeah, I wish it was easier to access their shows,
Yes, I was going to say, I'm really excited to watch it. Maybe this time next year I'll have seen it.
To me that has kind of lost its charm, the inability for people outside to see shows, especially because websites like ours give so much cover to, and they don't owe us anything, obviously, but it's like they put on these shows, and now with I understand there was some talk before, like, oh, you can do these shows because due to contracts they can't appear on TV or streaming or something like that, but I mean, now with essentially this, not to overuse the term, the whole forbidden door thing, but, you have talents appearing everywhere. You go scroll through IWTV sometime. I mean, there's a Ruby Soho take on Alex Shelley is one of the top things on there. Like there's like you can see there should be no reason why they're not doing streaming. I think it's not like they're using WWE talent, and everyone else is working everywhere else anyway. So why would it make any difference? And especially with like DVDs becoming more and more obsolete, I don't know. I'm hoping that if it hasn't, to me, it was going to change with the after the pandemic, if they were going to ever change to it. I just don't get the reasoning behind it for something that is so widely, like an organization so still widely beloved, and has so much buzz to it still, but you just kind of like, you're kind of, to me, it's unfortunate that more and more people can't get access to it easier in order to kind of understand what the hype's all about.
Yeah. And I totally agree on that end where like, it takes months sometimes, and it varies. Sometimes, you know, a show will be available like 3 or 4 weeks after, and sometimes the show won't be available 3 or 4 months after. And it will end up happening with me is you'll hear the buzz when it happens, right? You'll see the card, oh, PWG tonight. And then, you know, Dave might go down to LA and you might get a report in the Observer, might talk about it on Wrestling Observer Radio, and you'll hear a buzz from other people who happen to be there saying, oh my God, you know, this, you know, Bandito Toros match was amazing. Mm-hmm. And like, you forget about it because, as you know, we've certainly learned during these, you know, month by month recaps, a lot of stuff happens in wrestling and you forget about stuff that happened a few months ago. And so then it's like, oh, you might find out, oh, this show that took place in July is available, and it sounded exciting, but it's now October. Like, oh, I don't know if I'm going to watch that. Or it just feels like hard to maintain a buzz, especially when you look at what other companies are doing. And like you said, with IWTV, a lot of companies much smaller than PWG are streaming live, and they have the talent that, you know, PWG would want. And I think you're right, with the Forbidden Door being established, it would seem likely that would happen. But at the same time, PWG has been very stubborn. They have a tradition. They do not prioritize, you know, the people who aren't in the building.
Right.
It's a show for the live crowd. And that's part of what makes it special. And I understand that. But as you and I, people who live in New England, are probably not going to go to PWG. I've never been. I would like to go in theory. Yeah, fun, but yeah. I would have to like plan a whole trip around it, and I'd have to hope I could get tickets for it. But like, it's frustrating on that end to not have the kind of access to it when we're used to just having access to literally everything. And it doesn't matter how small the indie is, yeah, you can find it on, you know, somewhere.
Well, Jesse, we're at the end. That's it. That's all the news for December. And what a year in wrestling it was. We have, we've talked about before, there's no shortage of headlines, no shortage of things happening. Movement, AEW's made things a lot more interesting. The talent moving around has made things more interesting. You know, I think the industry has a interesting year ahead with these smaller groups. How do they survive? How do they thrive? How are they different? Get more eyeballs. I mean, yeah, you mentioned Terminus. I mean, that's another group in the mix to try to get people's eyeballs, and I think, yeah, the business is going to be no less interesting in 2022 as these companies kind of either look towards 2023 with you know, new TV deals in the mix. And yeah, it's going to be another set of fun things to watch on the chessboard and with all these groups.
Do you have any bold predictions for 2022?
Oh boy, let's see. What was I? You know, I more think of like, kind of bigger picture things. What's the best way to say this? I've said before, I think there's kind of a reckoning coming for some of these small groups, smaller groups. Like, I think they're going to be like MLW, NWA, the ones that are trying to get more attention. I think these other groups, you know, Ring of Honor, you know, if they come back, it's a question of how are we different? Some of the stuff we just talked about on this show. Mm-hmm. And how do you make money? How do you matter? You know, do you want to matter in a way of, we think there's really something to this, or do you think, or is it a case of, we just want to survive? If it's a case to survive, you know, it's hard to get people excited because you want something that's hot and interesting, and that people, you get the sense that the ownership and the people running it are really behind it and really interested in it. And, you know, with MLW, I think they're trying. I think this is kind of it for them this year ahead, and to see if they can really make any type of inroads towards any type of interest, bigger deal, something like that. I have my doubts, not because of the quality, but just because of the way that the business is. I think with NWA, we talked about some of their issues. I think when you bring back a bringing back someone like Austin Aries, and to your point earlier, you were talking about, you know, when you're at this stage, not bringing people back potentially considered, you know, unfavorable. I didn't really hear a big blowback on social media, which probably means a lot of people didn't watch or didn't care, which isn't good for your promotion either. Impact has their opportunity to take a stand. I think, you know, the business could use a really, really strong, visible number three. And is Impact going to be that group? I don't know. I don't know. We'll see how attendance goes at these shows, and we'll see how they can build and if they can kind of get out of the way of some stuff. GCW, I'm really fascinated to see how they continue their rise in the year ahead. They've said they don't want TV, so they're just going to keep doing what they do. And they put out a ton of shows, which I think can make it hard for some fans to access it because it's just a lot. But they don't seem to care. They're just going to keep plugging ahead. So I'm, you know, with AEW, it's I think the roster size is going to be a bit of a reckoning for them this year. Mm-hmm. I think at some point they're going to have to release some people. It's just they're going to have to do it either by releasing or not renewing contracts. And I think that's just a part of life. And Tony Khan's going to have to deal with the negative blowback from that. But that's the price of bringing in, you know, think of all the people that they are constantly bringing in. And with him, he's really into almost like kicking the can down the road in terms of, this may not be the best expression, but like, it's always what's next. Like, oh, the promise of someone new coming in. There's something interesting. There's something happening around the corner. And sometimes that can kind of hurt what you're trying to build right now. If you're always saying, hey, go around the corner and look over there. There's going to be something big coming around there because you kind of take the focus away from, is this really working with this, this, and this, and this? And, you know, I'm the roster size, I'm really, I wouldn't say concerned about, but I'm really interested in how that plays out this year because there's going to be a point where people are like, you know, why would we sign if we're just going to be on, you know, AEW Dark and, you know, we came here for an opportunity, but where are we seeing this opportunity? I think there's going to be some frustration there. And with WWE, it's a question of how do they stem the tide and do they have a hot run in them? You know, can they get out of their own way? Honestly, is Vince alive at the end of the year? Who knows? I mean, it sounds morbid to say, but he's getting older and he's put some miles on his body with a lot of things that probably shouldn't have been in there. And, you know, you never know with someone like that. And then what happens if he passes away? Or when he does, how does that affect the rest of the company? How does it affect the rest of the industry? Really, how does it affect the company? And you know, where does, we talked about this in the last show, I think it was the last show. What about Triple H? Where does he fit into the mix in 2022? Would he go back to NXT? Or is he going to be one of these guys that is just kind of an executive in WWE and they bring him out for certain things? And it's kind of remember when? You know, one of those type of conversations. So, yeah, I wouldn't say bold predictions, but there's a lot of different stories with each of these companies. I'm really interested to see how they play out this year.
Yeah, I'd be looking at, unfortunately, we're in year three of the pandemic, and obviously we're still reckoning with a lot of that stuff happens and how that impacts the business. You can look at Japan. A lot of these smaller companies in Japan really struggling during the pandemic. Japan has stricter, laws on attendance. Shows. These are promotions that rely a lot more on attendance to generate revenue than a lot of American promotions, which, you know, can rely a lot on television deals if they have them or iPay-per-view or different things like that. We've seen companies like Big Japan Pro Wrestling and stuff struggle a lot and come close to failing mainly due to the pandemic. I think that'd be one thing I'd look at. I think that the most fascinating story in wrestling will be WWE and AEW and how close can AEW get to WWE? How close can the, how close do they get in the ratings? How close do they do in attendance? Do we see AEW continue to pull itself closer to being a legitimate, mono a mono rival for WWE in a lot of ways? We still this year live in a world where WWE is ahead in most things, but can AEW get closer? And will that be because AEW surges in popularity or will it be because WWE continues to struggle? You know, you talking about Vince like that, you're not, it's not a, it's, you're not wrong to think that. I think a lot of people think Vince is going to live forever, and maybe he does live to be 100 years old. I think his mom is 100 years old.
Yeah.
But I do think that even if he, you know, I do think Vince, I do get the sense that Vince is kind of being phased away from WWE creatively, in a sense. I think you get a lot more stories about him not being at Raw when that used to like never happen. I think he takes away less of a role on the investors calls. You know, it's way more Nick Khan. It's way more Stephanie. It's very little Vince.
Yep.
He isn't on TV as much, although he has been in recent weeks, but he's been awkward on television. and he obviously is doing the whole egg scenario thing, and that was going to be awkward anyway. I do think that's a really interesting to look at, like, is Vince's creative role and who steps into the creative vacuum. If something happens to Vince, or Vince takes more time off, or even Vince is off, not around for weeks on end for some whatever reason, who is taking over the creative end of WWE? I think that's a huge, huge topic, because everyone just assumed it would be Triple H. You know, when he was running NXT, and everyone's like, oh, Triple H is being groomed for Vince's role, and even Triple H is going to be in charge of WWE creatively. I think from a business perspective, Nick Khan or someone like Nick Khan will handle a lot more of the business, will handle the business role that Vince had, or Stephanie will step into aspects of that. But from a creative end, you're going to be looking at, is it going to be Bruce Pritchard? Is it going to be John Laurinaitis? Is it going to be somebody else, which I would beg, please, somebody else to get like a lot of creative control power in WWE and be able to do stuff. Someone that maybe hasn't been around for 35 years, like those other two guys have. I think that's a really interesting trend to follow. And I don't know if we'll get like a big news, like one day we might wake up and Vince will be dead. But I think also perhaps more likely is we'll start seeing, I think, perhaps him phasing back his role in WWE. It sounds kind of crazy to think because of what we know of him. And he's kind of like this cartoon in our heads that he's just this guy that works 300 hours a week and never sleeps and will always be this way. But it is a really interesting idea to think about that and the implications that we'll have across all of wrestling. Because if WWE got their shit together, the wrestling business is totally different.
Mm-hmm. Totally different. You're right. So, yeah, well, we will we'll hopefully talk to you throughout the year and as we figure out the where things go. Yeah, kind of laid out a scenario where, yeah, a lot of interesting things ahead. Before we let you go, Jesse, I want to give you a chance to go ahead and plug where we can read you and where we can hear your beautiful voice. Go ahead.
Yep. You can – I always suggest just people follow me on Twitter, because that's where eventually everything will come up that I'm doing. But you can listen to my podcast with Jason Unpresser, the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast. You can find that right on YouTube. We're going to be – showing up this Friday, we're going to be talking to Wrestle Kingdom, kind of doing a review of Wrestle Kingdom. And the first two nights of Wrestle Kingdom, we will have not seen Wrestle Kingdom Night 3, which will take place a few days after we record. But that'll be coming out this Friday. Again, Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast. You can find that on YouTube. I haven't written a ton lately, just because of the end of the year and been occupied with some other stuff. But you can find me on Voices of Wrestling. You can find me on Wrestling Inc. Columns coming out. I like to do at least one a week. Sometimes I do two a week, sometimes none. Just kind of been bouncing around between projects. This time my latest column, which ran last week, is called No Selling in Wrestling Rules, Get Over It. And that's on voicesofwrestling.com. You can read that. I kind of go into like why like I think no selling is good and talk about the Hook Bear Bronson match and kind of about what kind of that whole debate that took place. It's funny that you mentioned today, like, I didn't know anyone else thought this way. And I said, I was going to say, Josh, a lot of people didn't like that.
Very good.
But it's just one of those things that I think people have different perspectives on, and that's why we like wrestling. But I appreciate being asked on twice, Josh.
I love it.
And I know I commend you for this effort. It takes a lot of time to put this together. You're doing 12 of these. Just the sheer amount of notes you send me, I'm like, wow, we're not missing anything really that happens in each month of wrestling. So if you think about it, you've probably talked about, I don't know, if you could probably do the math, but I would assume you've probably mentioned at least, I don't know, 800 or so topics in these yeah. recap videos. So yeah. very impressive work on your end, sir.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Glad to have you with me, pushing me across the line, and we're here. All right. Big thanks to Jesse Collins, and thanks to all you for listening to this episode and any of the episodes you listen to in this series. I consider them evergreen, so certainly feel free, please listen to them throughout the course of the month. They're all available, all for free, on this very website, WrestlingObserver.com. You can also search for free the daily feed if you like RSS. Instead, you can go to the website under, in the right-hand side, how to listen to podcasts. You need to do the free feed. You can do my feed. All my shows I make free. So check them out at any time. Obviously, check out the 4-part series of MMA. Look at 2021 in MMA that I did with Paul Fontaine. That is up as well. So yeah, if you're interested in looking back at history, kind of where we went, and with a lot of interesting different people and different takes, I would encourage you to check out the series. It has been an exhausting series to do, but an exhausting series in the best way possible. It is fitting I record this intro on my birthday, January 4th. Wrestle Kingdom has begun. Always remember that as my birthday. And yeah, this is a fitting end to the series. I'm glad that we can now move on and look ahead to 2022. I am going to now have some birthday cake, I think, and head on vacation for a couple days. Not because of the series, but something that was already planned, and hopefully stay very safe and smart while I'm out there as well. Again, you know, we've talked kind of looking ahead of 2022, initially was thinking about kind of doing an epilogue, a sense, to this series, but I think Jesse and I kind of wrapped it up. A lot of my thoughts on what I'm interested in this year ahead. And one note, and this I might write a column on at this point or at some point, but always keep in mind that pro wrestling is more than just ratings and demos. And I know on this website and others that there's so much emphasis put on these numbers, making every single person on the internet and Twitter seemingly an expert on TV stuff. But it's really the enjoyment of the product that drives interest and drives the passion fan base to me. And I think to you, when I started watching when I was a little kid, I didn't know what a rating was. I didn't know what a key demo was. I just watched it because I liked it. That's why I watched on Saturday afternoons. And that's the reason I like AEW. And that's a reason why, you know, a couple of minutes ago, I just finished a podcast I do for Limitless Wrestling, which is an indie promotion in Maine. You can watch an IWTV. I do that because it's a passion of mine. It's fun. I don't get paid at all from them. It's just it's a fun thing that I do that makes me feel good. And I think helps out this promotion that, you know, is trying to make it in the indie space. So just keep that in mind when you see these inane arguments from Twitter eggs or people that are really just trying to start shit or focused so heavily on a week's rating or something like that. And those, you know, those stories in the aggregate, I find, do have their place. And it's not to slight Paul or anyone else that does rating posts or Dave or anything like that. I just, the bigger hole, I think the minutiae, people get so deep into demos and ratings and even the promotion, you know, AEW leans into it a bit. Just focus on the product and what you like and what you don't like, and try not to worry so much about, like, is your side winning the war? There are no sides. This is all entertainment. And if you can think less in terms of sides and more in terms of what you like and what your preferences are, I think you'd be a happier wrestling fan. And I think probably most people listening to this are. That's just something to keep in mind. I know that a lot of us are frustrated with WWE because they were the promotion of our youth, and to see kind of what they offer now may not be as satisfying, but you know, there's sometimes they can pull out main events like they did at day one, which even though the winner may not have been what people would have liked, it was still a fun, fast paced match that was, it was entertaining to watch. And I think we haven't been able to say that with, you know, a lot of WWE in-ring product in a long time. So hopefully there is hope, but we've seen what happens with that with WWE. But regardless, just don't forget what you started watching wrestling for, and that's to enjoy it. And don't get too bogged down in the numbers and all that stuff. And of course, we're going to talk a lot about numbers and stuff this year, I'm sure. So make me a hypocrite anytime that you want. So until next time, which will probably be in a few weeks, I'm not sure what we're going to do, but I have a list of guests I want to start reaching out to that I think could be a lot of fun in the pro wrestling space, and we'll take it from there. But until next time, which will be some point in late January, mid-January, stay safe, be healthy, take care of yourself, and until next time, insert catchphrase here. Thank you.